Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com celebratory Conti Cup Final 2024 edition. For the 17th time in their history, Arsenal Women won the League Cup. It's been the Conti Cup since 2011. That's no problem because Arsenal own it under that particular sponsor title as well. Their seventh Conti Cup win, back-to-back Conti Cup winners, beating Chelsea in the final both times. Let's not pretend that is not extra satisfying with an extra time goal from Stina Blackstenius in what for the most part was kind of a very nip and tuck sort of game. Not a lot going on. And then obviously the emotion cranked up in several ways kind of after about the 96 minutes. So kind of a bit of a roller coaster game, really. I will point out at the top, you may have heard it right in the intro. Obviously, it's a bank holiday Monday here in England. So my daughter is home downstairs, and you'll probably hear her at some points interjecting into this podcast, probably with greater maturity and poise than myself. And someone else who's going to speak with greater maturity and poise than myself, delighted to welcome to the onto the podcast for the first time, Max Radwan. Max, how are you doing?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, just basking in the glory of winning, I think what we can all agree is the most prestigious competition, not just in women's football, but in world football, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And Stina Blackstenius is another person, player, we'll talk about her, I think, during this podcast, but who owns this competition, winning goal in the semi-final last year, scored in the final last year, hat-trick in the semi-final and the winner in the final this year. So, you know, there's got to be a set of tyres named after Stina after that, I think. But I'm with you. I'm very much in the basking stage, and the kind of slightly fortunate thing about a torturous journey home on public transport was that I had a lot of time to kind of go through Twitter. One of those rare times where I actually look at the For You tab just to see what's going around in both directions. Yeah. It must be said, this was a time I didn't mind Chelsea fans turning up on my For You tab. Max, just your overall kind of, you know, just like overall kind of emotion from the game and everything else, because obviously, you know, we won. That's great. There was the kind of Jonas Eidevall, Emma Hayes face off, which we'll discuss in a minute. Very concerning scenes with Frieda Mornham. How did you kind of experience that whole roller coaster, and what's your feeling nearly 24 hours later?
Yeah. It was one of those games where you do just feel like you need a bit of a lie down after you've watched it almost, because especially when a game goes the full distance like that, I think in some respects it was, I felt kind of similarly to how I felt when the men's team beat Porto the other week, and that went the distance as well, and very similar kind of game in a lot of ways. But yeah, I think it's really tricky when there's an incident like the one there was with Frieda, because then your mind's kind of anywhere but the football in, you know, one of the most important games you'll play all season. I was watching it on TV, which I was kind of grateful for at that particular moment in time, because it meant that, you know, the commentators could update everyone as soon as they could on Frieda's situation. So when they said she was stable, then that was kind of a point where I could go, okay, at least now I can kind of focus on the match. But yeah, so God knows what it was like for the players in those circumstances. But yeah, just one of those games where normally when we play Chelsea, especially this season, you know, it's been over as a contest by halftime. This couldn't have been further from that. So yeah, just one of those where you're on the edge of your seat until the end of the game. And as much as, like, when you win a trophy, normally it's unbridled joy. For me, there was just a lot of relief because, yeah, it was just a long game of football and with so much riding on it, especially for us. Yeah, it was just, you know, just that big release you get sometimes at the end of stressful kind of games. And I think you could kind of, I was very interested to see like how Jonas would react to the final whistle going, because, you know, sometimes he can be quite reserved, sometimes he can celebrate and certain people can take issue with that. But it was very much, I think compared to last season, he was like kind of, he took it quite calmly. This time the camera panned straight to him and he was, you know, there was properly jubilant scenes. And then obviously there was the whole handshake gate and all of that, which I'm sure we will get into.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like quite drained this morning. I was quite fortunate to be receiving kind of the same information about the same time. I've just watched the game back as the BBC commentary team, so we were kind of getting the same information. And yeah, I'm with you, because when that happened, my head was out of the game, really, because I really didn't know what we'd witnessed or what had happened, but it didn't look good. I've never seen Gary Lewin on the pitch before. And, you know, blankets coming on, and it was right down below me as well. And I was, you know, obviously the most important thing is kind of Frieda's health, rather than, you know, the game and everything. But yeah, I think receiving that information quite quickly, made quite a lot of difference. I think the crowd, really made a big difference. We'll talk about that as well, because again, I watched it back, and when extra time kicks off, there's the big rendition of the angel from the Arsenal fans, and something Jonas has spoken about a lot about these games this season is how the fans have really given an energy to the home team. I think it's fair to say Arsenal were really the home team on this occasion. But you referenced it there, and let's kind of do it from the outset, the kind of MA's Jonas side about the last time they'll face up to each other, well, as Arsenal and Chelsea manager anyway. And we saw, you know, what happened at the end where Chelsea kicked the ball out of play. I think if Arsenal are losing that game, Jonas catches that ball. but obviously it's right down below me. He ducks it, which, you know, that's his right as the manager who's winning the game. And obviously he said afterwards how they spoke about how Arsenal wanted multi-ball, Chelsea wanted one ball, Chelsea went for the multi-ball at the end when they were losing. I don't want to over-index that too much. I do think most teams in that desperate situation would do that. But then there's, you know, I think it's over-egging it to say an altercation. I think Aaron Cuthbert kind of shouts at Jonas Eidevall and it gets a bit heated. And then we see the push at the end by Emma Hayes. And Emma Hayes kind of said that she described it both to the BBC and to us in the post-match press conference as male aggression. So those words were chosen carefully and repeated. So I don't think it was... Maybe it was a bit heat at the moment. I think anything in within an hour of the final whistle probably is a bit, but she did say it twice, so she kind of meant it. And obviously we need to kind of put at the forefront of this that we're two men talking about this as well. But what did you make both of the incident and Emma Hayes' comments afterwards?
So starting with the incident itself, I think, like you say, that's quite... what Chelsea did there, it's quite like a natural situation for a team in that game, in that situation, in that game. And I agree with you. I think if the boot had been on the other foot, we may have seen something similar from Arsenal. But no, I think that's what you see there is just that stages of a cup final, emotions running high, and Chelsea looking for any marginal advantage they can get, and Arsenal. And, you know, these are two rival clubs. Let's not forget, probably, you know, the biggest rivalry there is in English women's football. And, it obviously, you can't ignore the dynamic of a male manager doing this when with female footballers and female coaching staff. Because I think if this happened in the men's game, you know, no one would bat an eyelid at it. But there is a difference there. And I suppose the unfortunate thing for Jonas is that there is some history there. If you go back to the incident with, was it Martha Thomas with Man United?
Martha Thomas, yeah.
And I think I don't know if that's maybe something that Jonas might have come to regret, given that's something that's kind of followed him around since then. The other thing that was mentioned was those comments from Gareth Taylor, that came up was those comments from Gareth Taylor earlier in the season. And without wanting to speculate too much, it there was never anything sort of concrete that Man City came back with there. But really, I think it's really tricky because you don't want to just dismiss those, as you say, like we're two men talking about this. So, you know, it's tricky to like just dismiss those comments, but I think it's what we saw there is just a natural part of football, in a high stakes game. And I don't really think, I think the amount of discussion it's got is maybe more than is warranted, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I've taken some time to think about it. I'm really glad you referenced the kind of Martha Tomer incident, which is from Jonas's first season. I'll admit I didn't like that. I felt that was too much from Jonas. That felt like taking a step towards a player. I was right behind this incident. And the reason I wanted to take my time is because from behind, I can't see like his real, well, I can see his stance, I can't see his face, can't see what he's saying. But from where I was, it looked like he stood there and Aaron Cuthbert went up to him and shouted at him, which is fine. I think, like you say, that's just happens in the last minute of a final. I don't think she did anything drastically wrong by doing that. I think that's quite natural. And from what I could see, he just stood there. Really, I didn't see him like take a step towards her or tower over her. Whereas I think the Martha Thomas incident was probably a bit more like that. I really just thought, even when you say stand your ground, it feels a bit territorial. But I think he really just stood there. I think, you know, and I've taken some time to look around at what other people have said, non-Arsenal fans have said. I read Susie Rack in The Guardian. She wrote, just come out this afternoon, and she said she thought the comments were out of order and using a term like male aggression. You know, that's a label that really sticks, and that she didn't think that was right. And I don't think it's right either. I think that's, listen, I think Emma Hayes is a sore loser. And I don't say that critically. I think most coaches that are winners are. They just are. Yeah. I think that's just part of it. But I think that was an out of order thing to say in this kind of scenario. I just don't really think he did enough. And let's drop in some of the audio, because obviously Jonas was asked about this in the post-match press conference. But the comment that really jumps out at me, he says, I'm happy for people to listen to what I said and look at what I did. Essentially, and we'll just play a little bit of that audio now, so you can hear how Jonas responded to this.
I don't see it as a big thing. I definitely don't see me as aggressive in that situation. I think that's very irresponsible, putting that label onto it. The argument that we had was before the game, if both clubs agree to play a multiple system, the Conte Cup final will be played with a multiple system. Arsenal wanted it to be played with a multiple system. Chelsea wanted it to be played with a one-ball system. Therefore, the final was played with a one-ball system. At that incident that happens, the ball gets kicked away and Chelsea wants to take a new ball and to throw a quick throw in. And I said, you guys wanted to play with one ball, now you need to get that ball to it. Of course, Aaron doesn't get happy over that. I didn't say anything more in that situation, but I think still that's how I think it is. If we decide to play with one ball, then we play with one ball to it. I like to play with multiple. I like when the game is quick, but they didn't want to do it, and then you can't do it when it suits you. I think there is definitely a way that you behave in the technical area to it. I also think there is a way you behave after the game, being a good winner, but you also need to be a good loser. You need to be responsible in both those situations to it. And I'm actually happy with the way I conduct myself. And then others need to look at themselves in the mirror and see if they're happy with themselves.
He said it was male aggression that you demonstrated. I mean, it was specific. I'm not down for male aggression on the touchline. How do you react to that? And do you acknowledge or even recognise that as your behaviour?
No, like I said, I think that's a very irresponsible way of labelling the behaviour that I have. I don't feel comfortable with that label. I don't think it's the truth to do that. So I think it's very irresponsible to doing that. I'm very happy for people. They can listen to what I'm saying. They can see what I'm doing there. It's nothing out of order or out of the ordinary.
Yeah, so he's spoken about, you know, he described Gareth Taylor's comments as slanderous. Well, he said nearly slanderous on this occasion, and yeah, clearly not happy about that. And I do kind of understand that, like you. I don't want to completely dismiss it out of hand, but I didn't really think there was a case to answer here. But anyway, that's the kind of nonsense aside. Let's talk about the actual game and the lineup. Art DeRoche and I did a kind of podcast looking ahead to this game, and we were galaxy braining things that Jonas might do. We were talking about maybe there'll be a back three, and actually it turns out Chelsea didn't really play the same way as they did at Stamford Bridge, which I was quite surprised about. But, you know, Stina Blackstenia started up front, told that Alessia Russo was a bit ill during the week, which is why she didn't start, and actually why we didn't see her till very, very late in the game. Chloe Lacasse on the left wing, and that, you know, I wouldn't call that a surprise so much, but Caitlin Ford usually plays. What did you make of the kind of the lineup and perhaps some of the plan that went into that?
Well, when I initially saw the lineup, I was slightly surprised by it. And I think naturally, like a lot of Arsenal fans, I was like, well, Russo probably had her best game of the season against Chelsea at the Emirates. She played great against Villa. Why is she not playing here? But then when the coverage started on BBC, which was like half an hour before kickoff, they immediately brought up that Russo had been ill in the week. So then when you take it in that context, actually there wasn't a huge amount that Jonas could do with the team once he decides to go with a back four, which I know obviously, yeah, you and I are discussing that. I don't know, we discussed that on Twitter before the game, but I don't know if there was any realistic prospect of Jonas actually going to the three. So when you take if you assume we play with a back four, and Russo isn't available from the start, well, once Kim drops deeper into midfield as she has been doing in Velti's absence, then that only really leaves Frieda Monnen as an option as the 10, and then it becomes a question of who plays on the left wing. I guess that would have been the major selection dilemma, and I think Chloe Lacasse probably on form edged it over Ford. So one of those where it made sense when you see that Russo wasn't available. Would have been interesting to see what would have happened had she been available from the start. I think, yeah, because of not just her lack of availability, but other players, there wasn't actually, I think his hand was kind of forced in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think what was kind of interesting about it as well is Jonas has spoken as well about the kind of lack of partnerships, maybe lack of familiarity in the team, but he used Stina and Frieda together. I think that's a very well-established 10-9 partnership, and I went back and looked at that, looking back at the game and the way they pressed, and I think that kind of worked to Arsenal's advantage. And then bringing Ford and Catley on as subs in quite close succession, and Arsenal get the goal from that in the end. So, like, I think there was maybe a slightly better use of some of the synergies that actually do exist in the team, because obviously Vault has come out now. So you've got Little and Palova, who've only really played together in those positions, I think, twice before. So I do think Arsenal maybe made a little bit better use, whether by design or whether forced. I mean, Catley and Ford, that was by design. They were both left on the bench, but maybe the Stina Frieda thing kind of worked to Arsenal's advantage. And I thought those two were such a massive part of the victory. But another player I want to talk about, Max, because I really like talking about Manu Zinsberger, because it really winds people up when I do, because I'm a massive Zinsberger apologist. But in seriousness, I've seen her get a lot of praise today. Obviously, she makes a massive save at the end from really the only... there weren't many clear-cut chances in the game on either side. That's really the only very clear chance Chelsea make. And she comes up with the save. I think she's always been very strong in those one-on-one situations. But I've really loved seeing her get a lot of credit because to me, I think she's been playing like this for a while. And actually, I think she probably just needed like a big moment for everyone to kind of start to notice. And look, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she'll throw one in her own net in the next game and we'll all be back into the she's terrible discourse kind of thing. But, you know, just I guess the importance of that moment and what you made of Zinsberger's whole performance as well.
Yeah. No, I'm really happy for her that she got that moment, because I think in cup finals in particular, you do look back on the moments, and that is probably, whether it's like a big tackle or a save or something, in this instance, a save. I think that's one that Arsenal fans will look back on for a lot of years. And like when she's left the club in the future, you know, in a long time, that will be a moment people talk about, hopefully. Other than that, yeah, I thought she was really solid all game, really good on crosses. As far as I can remember, didn't have a huge amount to do outside of that save. There was that one she made from James in the first half at her near post. But did everything she needed to with consummate ease. And just, I think, good for her that she has, you know, she, like you say, she's come under like quite a lot of criticism this season, when really, like, in terms of actual howlers she's made, like, there's probably maybe the West Ham one and maybe the one in the away game at Stamford Bridge, but by and large, I think there's almost this thing where whenever we concede a goal, people just seem to want her to turn into like prime Hope Solo and just like get to everything, which, and just place a sort of unrealistic expectation on her. So really nice for her to have that moment. And I wasn't at the game yesterday, but obviously I've been to plenty of games as a fan this season, and the way she interacts with the fans is really infectious. And this is very much, I don't even know if you can call it a soft factor, but it's you know, you kind of just naturally want to root for a player like that. And seeing some of the footage in the ground of the way she was sort of living the game at the end, just really delighted for her that she got that big moment in this game.
Yeah, she, when I spoke to her a few weeks ago, she talked about that, about how she's changed her communication style, first of all, because there's bigger crowds now and her defenders can't hear her, but also using the crowd. And I think you're right. I think she's very good at that. And listen, that doesn't make someone like the best goalkeeper in the world, but I think it's important. And I was really happy for her. Like I said, I think I've seen this performance a lot, and I hope this means other people start to see it as well. But I think there were a lot of really strong individual performances in the game. I thought Victoria Polova, Emily Fox, I thought Lotta Wubamoy at centre half was outstanding as well. The way Frieda and Steena combined was really, really impressive. Who would you pick out as your kind of the individual performances you really enjoyed?
Well, watching the game first time around, there were two players in particular who stood out to me. So I suppose I'll start with the player who was given, at least by the BBC, the Player in the Match award. And that was Victoria Polova, who I thought in every aspect of her game, particularly in the first half, was just outstanding. In some of like the close control she was showing in the first half in tight spaces, I think recently her form had dipped a little bit, and like the game at Stamford Bridge, that was a really uncharacteristic performance, I thought, from her in terms of like being quite like loose technically. But she was totally back to her best in this game, and really helpful in a match where we were really composed, I thought, in possession, and like happy to patiently build up. And there's one move in particular quite early in the game where we do a nice move from front to back, and it ends in a Lacazette shot. But her sort of performance on a technical level kind of exemplified that side of Arsenal's game. But also another side of her game that sometimes gets overlooked is the defensive work she does. And like, again, she was like all over the pitch doing, you know, making tackles. And I don't know what the stats were on her tackles and recoveries and things like that, but she was really just everywhere, didn't stop running all game. I think you could see her getting a little bit leggy towards the end, but that's perfectly understandable in the circumstances. And I mean, another thing as well with her is her versatility. When you consider this was a player we brought in really as a winger, and that was actually where she finished the game, because at that point I think we made four subs in the end, and the only players we had left on the bench were two goalkeepers and Vivian Lear. So when Kenny Cross came on, it was like, okay, you need to play on the wing because you're the only one that can play left who can kind of do that. But the fact that she can go from that deep role to doing that, I mean, yeah, just what an excellent signing she's been. And the other player, while we're on the subject of great, hopefully great January signings, I don't know if it's a little too early to say this with this player yet, but Emily Fox, obviously a player who missed the Stamford Bridge game from the start, and by the time she did come on, you know, it was over as a contest. And I thought her performance made a real difference today. When you think about how often Katie's played at right back this season, and don't get me wrong, she's been absolutely fine and good when we want to take a narrow shape out of possession and everything, but the amount of flexibility you get when you play Fox there instead, because she's a player, she can go inside, she can go out. She seems to have a really good understanding of when if one player goes wide, she'll come in, and vice versa. And she's, considering she did only arrive in January, she's really seamlessly fit into the team. So those are the two in particular I'd pick out. But I think there's a number of players you could look at who really did well yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. I think Pullover, she didn't look fit to me after she had that hamstring injury, I think, off the international break. And prior to this game, I mean, like at Stamford Bridge, I don't know, maybe it was just a bad night. But when Pullover's not all over the pitch like the Roadrunner, I tend to think maybe there's something wrong. You're right, like this, for me, in tight spaces, the biggest problem we had in the first game was turning over the ball in midfield too much. And she was very guilty of that. Not on this occasion. I thought she was outstanding. And yeah, exactly what you said about Emily Fox, because and I think that's where we've really got a third dimension with a right back now. There are so many times where she's kind of going down the line and Beth Mead's heavily marked, but if Beth Mead's heavily marked, that leaves the space inside, and she's good at driving inside. And Arsenal are doing a lot of this thing at the moment where they build on the right and very quickly switch over to the left-hand side, and she really enables that. And honestly, like Chelsea played Lauren James on the left wing, I think that was a mistake from them, actually. To be honest, and I haven't seen many right backs handle her better than Emily Fox did. And also with Emily Fox, like, she was the only player in extra time who, to me, didn't look tired. And I'm not criticizing the other players for looking tired. They completely deserve to. She looked utterly at the same level as the start of the game. And there's some brilliant recovery stuff on like Kat Macario and Lauren James. And I think you're right. I thought Emily Fox was absolutely outstanding. We're going to take a little break there. And after the break, we'll come back, talk a little bit about extra time, the scenes at the end, the celebrations, and maybe a little bit about what this means for the future, if indeed anything. So we'll be right back after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog.
And we're back, and Max and I are going to talk now a little bit about, I guess, how Arsenal won this game in the end, in extra time. I mean, Max, putting aside what, you know, the kind of distressing scenes with Frieda at the end, like once it became clear that situation was okay and we were, you know, head back in the game for extra time, what was your kind of feeling? Were you confident? Did you think it would go to penalties? How did you feel going into the extra 30 minutes?
To be honest with you, whenever a game goes to extra time, I always just watch it with the assumption that it will go the distance to penalties. I don't know what like the statistics are on the amount of games that do, but like anecdotally, it just seems to happen quite often. So I was basically thinking during the first half of extra time, okay, we've got Kim on the pitch here, we've got Katie on the pitch, we've got Steph Catley on the pitch, Russo. So I was already kind of, you know, making my list of penalty takers almost, which is interesting because obviously Katie was one of the players who was substituted. I think it was at half-time.
That was my first thought when she came off. My first thought was we've burned a penalty taker.
Yeah. But I think that, I don't know if, I'd be interested to get your opinion on this. If I'm not sure Jonas is the kind of guy who would be like, okay, let's just settle for penalties here. I think, you know, and Arsenal were very proactive in that second half of extra time in particular. Like when you actually think of, I was reading back the match report because when there's 120 minutes plus injury time of football, some of that can get lost. So I was kind of, you know, reading it back to sort of go over the key details again. And I'd kind of forgotten how many opportunities we had in extra time and even just in one half of extra time, because preceding the goal, there was Caitlin Ford had a few good moments down that side. And I thought, by the way, she was really excellent when she came on because she's had quite a difficult season, I think it would be fair to say, but had a real impact coming on. But anyway, she was involved in a few opportunities before the goal. There's that one where Cooney Cross plays the pass of the match for me. So it was really probably Arsenal's strongest spell of the game, I would say, because for quite a lot of the game, it was quite back and forth. Chelsea probably had the better of the second half of the 90 minutes. But I mean, I'm always kind of amazed at the mentality of this team, because to go through you know, an incident like they did with Frieda and sort of just basically have to compartmentalize that, and I know that was something Jonas referenced in his post-match press conference, and to do that, to regroup when you're not just mentally drained and potentially mentally all over the place, but, you know, physically completely shattered as well, because, you know, we didn't have like the biggest pool of available players. So to show that sort of extra gear in extra time was incredible, I was quite surprised by just sort of the way we were able to dig that level of performance out of us. But I suppose the lesson there is to never write this team off, because they're quite good at surprising people in those sort of circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, again, watching the game back, the first thing that happens, well, so they make the substitution at halftime in extra time to bring Cooney Cross on for Katie McCabe, and they move Paloma to the right. The pass you referenced to Caitlin Ford, that's all about because Cooney Cross is one of the best players at the diagonal pass, as she showed there. And it was clear Arsenal really wanted to stretch Chelsea in the second half of extra time. The first thing they do from centre, they knock it back to Lotta, and she hits a big diagonal over to Caitlin Ford. And then the next time Lotta gets the ball, big diagonal over to Caitlin Ford. Cooney Cross gets that pass you referenced, big diagonal. Like it was clear to me, particularly on rewatching, that Arsenal felt that Chelsea's legs were gone, which I think they were. And I think that's kind of understandable given Chelsea's schedule. So my feeling going into extra time was we've got to use this because they're going to be more tired than we are. And actually, I think the way we approached the second half of extra time, there's also Steena had a great chance at the beginning of extra time as well, where she puts it over the bar. And I think you're right. I think that was Arsenal's best period of the game. And I think there was a clear commitment to, right, let's really test their legs now and see what Chelsea have got. And whereas I do think, and again, understandably, I think Chelsea were kind of, you know, holding out for penalties a little bit. You referenced there, what Jonas said around extra time and managing that. That was in reference to a question I asked him in the press conference. So I'm just going to play the audio for that now so you can hear what he says, particularly about managing the emotion of the situation, because Freedom Ornum went down shortly before the beginning of extra time. So let me just drop that audio in here so you can hear what he says.
Jonas, I wanted to start with, I guess, managing the emotional side. Particularly at full time after what happened with Frieda, and must have been very difficult for everyone to refocus on extra time. What did you say to the group at that point?
I mean, one of the learnings from the game that we had against Chelsea in the league was that we as a group didn't cope well in a high pressured, stressed environment with the way that we focused on the right things or the way that we communicated. And that was a really important lesson from us in that game. If we want to be a high-performing team, we need to own those situations. I mean, this is probably one of the hardest situations because, of course, it looks very scary when Frieda goes down. Of course, it's very easy to get drawn both the focus and emotions to that point. But the reality of it is that we have a great medical team and they're the one that's going to look after that situation. And we need to focus on playing football. And we were able to do that. Then, of course, the first thing after the game, don't care about winning. We care about how is it with Frieda. And it's so happy that she's doing well. And that's more important than this. That's much more important than this. But in that moment, to it, we need to stay task orientated. And there's nothing we can do in that moment to improve that situation, but we can have control over how we're playing football. And that's what we needed to control on. And that's, of course, what Frieda now after as well, like what wanted us to do as well, to be able to make her champion.
So that was Jonas in response to my question around managing the kind of emotion of that. And I don't think you can underestimate how difficult that is to compartmentalise. It was really interesting that he drew on what they'd learned from the last Chelsea game where he felt they didn't manage the emotion. And I kind of think he was not in as many words. I think he was referencing the delayed kickoff at Stamford Bridge when he talked about, you know, we didn't manage stress. I don't know. I'm just inferring, but I think there, because very publicly, you know, he said that didn't make a difference to the game. It's the same for both teams. It was the same for both teams. But I think if you asked him privately, he'd probably say Chelsea dealt with that a lot better than Arsenal did last time around. And that actually, in a weird way, that prepared them for this situation a little bit. Obviously, very, very different situations, but still like an unexpected kind of a bit of turbulence really to deal with. I thought that was a really interesting piece of insight if I've got that right. But so Arsenal get the Steena Blackstenius goal at the end, and it's Caitlin Ford and Steph Catley who combine on the left. And you're right, Caitlin had a big, big part in this game. And just kind of sum up, first of all, your emotions when that went in, but you know, I saw immediately Amy from goal, who was kind of sat in front of me. I saw her tweet and she said, Steen has won it for Arsenal. And there was still like 5 minutes left. But did that feel pretty final to you?
It did, yeah. My first thought was, oh my God, I wish I had, got a ticket and travelled up to Wolverhampton for this game, because I'd have loved to be in the Arsenal end. But because it had been, you know, such that there had been chances in the game, but it did always, I think you get a sense sometimes watching a game that, okay, yeah, this is going to be a one goal game. And I think that feeling was present in the 90 minutes. So I think when she did get that winner, yeah, I mean, obviously you never know in football, but it did feel like the winner. And then it's just a case of Arsenal having a level head and managing the end of the game well, which I guess we'll get onto. But I think we did that really well in terms of with Caitlin in particular, just taking a no nonsense approach when she could have gone to the corner or kept the ball, just going, nah, I'm just going to hoof it out and waste a bit more time that way. It did feel like that was kind of the moment that was going to decide the game at that point.
Yeah, and I think you saw, I mean, look, when you're winning, it's easier, I think, to manage emotion. But I think the kind of the one ball decision in that period did kind of do for Chelsea. And I don't know whether I'm giving Caitlin too much credit to say that might have been going through her mind when she was like kicking for touch like a rugby player. But yeah, wonderful moment. And a great moment for Stina Blackstenius as well, who's, you know, really been panging them in this season, albeit, you know, there's some opponents there, maybe that, you know, not WSL quality opponents, but she has been making big contributions in big games. And, you know, had Russo not been ill, she might not have started. Had Frieda's situation not have happened, it might have been her going off for Russo. So the fact that she got 120 minutes, I'm not sure that definitely happens without those scenarios. But then again, the fact that she has been used pretty sparingly this season probably made her a good candidate to play for 120 minutes. How pleased were you that it's Stina Blackstenius in her tournament that got that winning goal? And I guess a bit like Manu got that big moment.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, not for the first time in a Conti Cup final against Chelsea either. It just felt fitting, didn't it? I was at the semi-final against Aston Villa at Meadow Park, and I was talking with someone about Stina's record in the Conti Cup, and we were kind of joking about they should make a golden continental tire top scorer trophy, and we figured out that she actually was level with Rachel Daly in terms of goals scored in the Conti Cup this season going into this game. So that's the one, the goal that tips her into the prestigious territory of top scorer in the Conti Cup this season. So yeah, it was fitting in so many ways. And again, like much like with Manu, she has like such an infectious personality, and like to see her get that moment, like obviously I'd be happy for any Arsenal player who scores a winner in the cup final, but for her in particular, when you cast your mind back to just over a year ago when she was struggling in the sort of early part of 2023. And I think she's, considering, you know, there was all that talk about her being included in a swap deal for Russo, and whether or not that was true, that you'd imagine would have had a big effect on the player to hear those rumours going about, those rumours about her. So to sort of show the resilience to sort of pull her sleeves up when Russo's arrived at the club and say, okay, I'm still here, I'm still going to have a big impact at the club. I think Jonas Serra has been quite helpful in where he quite often talks about starters and finishers, and he's been good at using both of his strikers this season so that whoever, regardless of who starts a game, both can have a big impact on it. But I think what she's done this season is a real testament to her character. And it's also, I think it's really good that we've basically got two strikers who can offer us completely different things. Don't get me wrong, they do have some similar qualities there, but I think that's, I could maybe be critical of some of the squad building in Arsenal's attack, but I think with those two centre forwards having players who offer something distinct, and also players I think who we've got better at knowing kind of how to use, and you referenced like combinations earlier, and I think the fact that it was her and Frieda was definitely helful today, yesterday. So that was just a lovely moment for her.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Arsenal are trying to persuade her to sign a new contract at the moment. And I really hope this is a moment for her as well that makes her feel important and connected. And I love the video on Victoria Pilova's Instagram of all the players singing her name on the coach home to the tune of Karma Chameleon. And I like, if you're not going to have like a Sam Kerr, Bunny Shaw, what Viv was when she was a number nine for us under Joe, that kind of striker. I think having two really good, reliable strikers, like, I think it's a good model. And I do think that, I think Jonas has used Steiner better than Russo this year, probably just because he knows the player a bit better. But I think he has been good at introducing her at the right times in the right games to get the most out of her strengths. And I thought she was so good in this game, and the way she really stuck to Khadisha Buchanan and ran that channel was really, really strong. And, you know, she had a couple of good chances in extra time. I'm really pleased for her. I really hope she stays. I do think she will, just because of the size of club Arsenal are. And, you know, I don't know where she'd move if she did move, really, but kind of fingers crossed on that. And I really hope this is a moment that kind of helps to persuade her. But what about then the kind of the celebrations at the end? Because one of the things I did on my 5-hour journey home, when I had a lot of time to reflect and scroll my timeline, was look at all of the videos I saw posted. And I posted one from the press box of all the crowd singing The Angel with the players at the end. And I was really emotional about it. I had a few tins on the way home, so that might have helped tug the emotional side along a little bit. But it just, you know, for me, I was there in like 2011 when they won it, 2013 in front of like 1,000 people or so, and seeing like a big like cop style kind of stand Premier League club completely full of Arsenal fans, scarves in the air. I mean, those images will, and that experience will live with me for a long time. And as someone, you know, like you said, who's been at a lot of games and been in the stands and part of that kind of burgeoning fan culture, like, not just how did you feel seeing those scenes, but I guess being part of that over the last couple of years.
Yeah, like you, I was kind of, it was definitely quite emotional. I think, like, even comparing to last year, where I was at the final at Selhurst Park, and I remember at the time when the Angel played, when we won on that occasion, thinking like, wow, this is kind of come a long way from even the year before, where at times we were like struggling to sell out Meadow Park. I was actually speaking to someone yesterday who was at the game, and they were saying, like, honestly, even compared to what the scenes last year, like, this was just on a completely different level. When you consider that, I think at this time, sort of last year, we were talking about the fan culture growing. So the fact that it's kind of gone almost, with me, it's almost like I keep thinking, okay, we've kind of reached the top of the mountain here, and this is probably it. And then it just goes another level further. And just incredible to see, completely, basically packed out end, which, you know, given all the circumstances surrounding inconveniences getting to this game, is a huge credit to the fan base. And it's one thing to have fans turn up and watch you, it's another to get people engaged and singing songs and, you know, forming an emotional connection to this team. And I think for that to be, there's no better way of expressing that than celebrating winning a trophy with your players. Because I know the players quite often like to have these moments with the fans, and even like when we play a game at the Emirates, they'll go around the pitch afterwards and do a lap of appreciation. But I don't think there's very few moments, basically cup finals are the only moments where you can really have these moments where you properly can sort of share a moment as one. And to see those scenes, knowing that, like, there are plenty of people I know who have been going to games a lot longer than me as well, who have really, like, been a big part of building that. And it's, you know, it's kind of cliche to talk about like community with women's football, but it is absolutely true that, like, it's a lot of people coming together and you know, for kind of common cause in their team and creating something organically as well. Like, as much as Arsenal, you know, obviously can do marketing for their games, it's a lot of people are going because they want to go, and they know people, they've met people through the game, through going to games, and they experience these incredible atmospheres and then they want to come back for more. And I think the scenes yesterday were just a sort of nice summation of like how far we've come, even within the last couple of years. So yeah, I'm just really happy for everyone that was there yesterday that they got that moment, and even for the people who weren't, to sort of feel, especially people, you know, who don't live in the UK and can't get to every game. There's, you know, even they I think can feel this connection with their club. I can imagine, especially for you, having been to those kind of sparsely attended finals, it must just be almost like a pinch yourself moment even now, even though this has been going on now for quite a while. But yeah, just incredible. I think the next step is hopefully like getting like more of a engaged crowd across the whole of the Emirates. But I think even that, we're seeing the start of that with I'm thinking like the United game recently, where there's sort of one atmosphere block, but then you get these other blocks where sometimes a chant will kind of go around the stadium. Honestly, our fan base keep surprising me in like the levels which they go to support our team, and long may it continue.
Yeah, hear. Like you say, a lot of people have done a lot of work to make that happen as well. And I kind of snuck in quietly for a little bit. I try and go to some of the kind of pre-game meetups as well. And, you know, the pub that I can't stay for too long and drink or anything like that, because, you know, I have work to do and all of that. But I mean, I went in probably about midday, and it was already just completely rammed. And just walking to the stadium, all the pubs were full of Arsenal, the streets were full of Arsenal. All I could hear was Arsenal songs. And yeah, it's something that makes me very emotional, and that made me very emotional yesterday. It was an emotional day anyway. I think with the Frieda thing as well, I didn't really have a sense of the Jonas Emma gate at that point, and they hadn't done their post-match interviews. And yeah, seeing that at the end, I think that'll live with me for a very long time. And I loved as well that, you know, all this is happening while the men are playing, like in the second half of their biggest game of the season, and you've still got thousands of Arsenal fans who've come to see the women's team, many of whom won't really care about the men's team, many of whom do. But the fact that wasn't a blocker to this at all just shows me that there's really something here, and it's fantastic to see it. And it's fantastic to observe it from a distance as well. But kind of just a last thing I think to touch on in terms of, you know, legacy, if any, of this kind of tournament, because this did feel more like an FA Cup final, really, in that the league season, I think, is going to be a bit anticlimactic in the last few games, because we're on a little island in third place, and I really don't see us going up or down that ladder at this stage. And, I'm really going to be looking at it almost like a mini pre-season almost. Like, do we see anything new? Do we start to see ideas take hold? Like, you know, is this a building block, this trophy? Or you could say it's a confirmation of what we already knew. And Jonas touched on this afterwards. He said, we compete well in these games. And he referred to consistency. And that's obviously true. But I mean, I think we can take that as code for, you know, the games against like mid-table teams, which have been that's really stopped us competing this season. Do you think this can be a building block, or does it maybe feel like, yeah, well, we kind of knew we can beat Chelsea because we've done it a few times before in the last year. And, you know, we haven't. Someone in our comments section on Ask Blog News the other week called the Jonas Eidevall era failure to launch. And that's kind of, I actually think, unfortunately, that's been quite a good phrase for it. Can you see a launch from here?
I think maybe the way to look at this game and this result is that, yeah, like you say, we kind of know that Arsenal can perform in these games, or at least compete. But I think that was what made the defeat at Stamford Bridge so alarming. And I'm just thinking about like what the consequences would have been if if we hadn't turned up in this game, because if the kind of the main thing in favor of the manager and the sort of project, if you like, is that we can compete against these top sides and then we go and lose to Chelsea twice in a couple of weeks, then suddenly those results against the likes of Spurs and Liverpool and West Ham become a lot harder to stomach. So first of all, I think that was just important to sort of reaffirm that, yeah, at our best, this is who we are, and we can show that on a consistent basis, even if we have sort of a lack of available players. I completely agree that like the rest of the season is, yeah, almost just like a bit of a prolonged pre-season, and hopefully just a nice post Conti Cup sort of celebratory vibe sesh.
The trophy to every game, I think.
Yeah,
I think
I reckon,
do a little parade before and after the game, lean into it.
Yeah. Get Katie McCabe to drink champagne out of it after every game as well. Why not? I think these remaining games are important in the sense of like, okay, against Aston Villa, we saw sort of the first signs that we were having more success breaking down low blocks. And, you know, the results maybe don't really matter, but the performances certainly do. So, So I think going forward now, it's about, okay, great, you've done this against Chelsea. Let's see what we can do with when. I think now he's starting to get a better idea of how to use a squad which is probably a little bit too big. And I know like that's something you and Art referenced, not qualifying for the Champions League and how that's created its own issues. I think this was important. And it sounds like a small thing, but just to raise the general mood around the club, because winning a trophy certainly helps doing that. And like, I don't want to sort of, I'm a bit reticent to make a comparison to the men's game because I don't want it to sound forced, but you think about Arteta back in 2020 and some of the struggles we had then, where you could see there was something there, but it wasn't quite clicking. And then we won a cup final against Chelsea, but we also had a big win against Chelsea at the end of that year that sort of was the launch pad to greater things. I still think Jonas is a very good tactician. You can see that we look well coached, well structured when we play. And so hopefully this, for his sake and for Arsenal's sake, this trophy, winning a second Conti Cup in a row, can kind of go some way towards just buying him up. I mean, I have no idea like how much pressure he actually is or was under internally, but hopefully, just restores a bit of belief among the fan base and buys him a bit of time and we can go forward from here. But what certainly I think those last few games will be interesting from the perspective of, okay, like our next game's Bristol City at home. Let's go there and break them down and create chances, because that, I know we beat Bristol City away, but that was a pretty stodgy performance, and that's got to be the next challenge. And the one that sort of on paper should be the easier one really than consistently playing well against Chelsea. But obviously you can't keep saying that when you're dropping points against those teams. So I guess to answer your question in a long-winded way, we'll see if this is a launch pad. But certainly I'm much happier to be having this conversation off the back of a win, because I think we really had to be questioning where we were going if we lost another big game against Chelsea.
Yeah, definitely. And, it's Bristol City at home, Leicester at home, Everton away. Before we go to Manchester City, I think there is a chance to put a run together. I think it is important, not necessarily for like league points, but I think it's important for momentum and belief of the fans and of everyone to finish this season strongly. I think we should be taking 9 points from those next three games not without too many problems. But I think we need to see three good wins where we're not, too stressed, and then go into that Man City game. And that can feel like a real bellwether for how well we could, because we haven't won there in 8 years, 7 years, 7 years since we won there. So, turn that around a bit and finish the season strongly. And then I think people will feel differently going into the summer. But yeah, this kind of does have to be a launch pad now, because there have been a few false starts. And I think the owner side of Al knows that, but that those kind of recriminations can wait for another day. Today was absolutely a day of celebration, and something I've been rubbish at doing this is preparing the celebratory podcast, because I'm usually so focused on pre-match prep and I don't want to jinx anything. So I did get in contact with Max over the weekend and said, like, let's just do a podcast. And I really, really hoped it would be a nice celebratory one like this one, which we haven't done enough of. So I'm really glad I was organized enough to do that. And Max, really, really glad that you could join us to kind of bask in the reflective glow. And we'll have you on again very soon. Thanks very much, Max. And Max, also tell people where we can find you. You have a Substack as well, if you want to tell people about that.
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter. My username is @max_rads. So that's RADS. And yeah, Substack, which is whateverthewever.substack.com. And yeah, that's purely a phrase about that lots of people used. And Louis Dunford, please don't sue me. I've recently become a more regular member of the crew on the Potshot podcast. So if getting into the real sort of tactical nuts and bolts surrounding Arsenal women is your thing, then give us a listen on that on all good podcast platforms.
Yep, thanks for that. And we had Seb on from the Potshot podcast as well, just before Christmas as well. I do thoroughly recommend that podcast. But that's all we have time for this episode. We will be back with another episode. Probably we'll do some kind of mailbag during the international break. And like I said last time, I'd really like to do an episode about dealing with pregnant players from a strength and conditioning aspect, particularly with Amanda Ilestedt. So that's something I'll work on in the background. But we really wanted to put out a podcast of some sort for you today. We're glad that it was a happy, shiny, happy people type podcast rather than an everybody hurts podcast. But until next time, thanks so much for joining, and we will speak to you again very, very soon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.